Welcome to our podcast. This is Friends on Fire.
I'm Mike. I'm a lifelong devotee of financial independence. I even wrote a book about it.
And I'm Maggie, a newer convert, but just as passionate, especially on the intersection of minimalism and financial independence. We're one and the
same. We are two like-minded friends who believe that talking about money with your friends and family opens the door to financial well-being.
The Friends on Fire podcast is about dispelling myths, building financial acumen, and sharing your financial independence journey with the people you care about.
This is Friends on Fire.
Hey, Mike.
Hey, Maggie.
Hi, Jess.
Hey.
Hi, Jess. Welcome back to the show.
Yeah. Thanks for having me.
So today we are going to welcome back Jess from the Pioneers. We first interviewed her on episode 42. I had to go back in my notes and look, and I was like, that felt like a long time ago. That was June of 2020, which was almost 2.5 years ago at this point. And I remember talking to you during the episode and then privately after about a lot of my feelings about, like, I was working, I was stressed. It was the heart of COVID then. And I just remember, like, you had a very early and important influence on my journey. So I'm excited to have you back because I follow you along, you know, on the internet, on the interwebs, but I'm excited to see your face and catch up with you and see what you've been up to. So let me, for our listeners' sake, let me give a proper intro and just tell everyone a little bit about you. I would encourage people go listen to episode 42 with you if they haven't, because I think it's a good kind of precursor to this episode. But Jess is a full-time human being, which I love. I hope we all are, but maybe not. Full-time human being, part-time writer and lifestyle design coach. She is co-founder of The Pioneers, which is an award-winning financial independence blog focused on the intersection between financial independence and lifestyle design. She also provides coaching, courses, and retreats on career discovery and lifestyle design for people who want to take unconventional paths and design lives that they love. In her free time, you can find her spending as much time as possible outside, perfecting her sourdough pizza recipe, which I want to hear more about, and road tripping in her camper van, which we're going to talk more about. You are officially living out my tiny house camper van dream. So welcome back.
Thanks so much for having me.
So Jess, we normally do a whole bunch of intro questions, but we have already covered this because you were a repeat guest. We're going to get into a focused and important topic today.
I'm excited about this topic. And as Mike said, I think an incredibly important topic. Early retirement, I believe, is attainable for just about anyone if they really want to make some trade-offs and sacrifices in their life. But sacrifice, you know, is the big word there. Some people, depending on their income, require more or less trade-offs and sacrifices if they truly want to reach financial independence. But the reality is, for a lot of people, this feels impossible, overwhelming, and some people just don't want it. They're like, I don't know what I would do with all that free time. And so I think this episode is going to be so important for, like, the masses, quite honestly, because I do think there's a lot of people that want to improve their finances, but they're not truly seeking to, like, quit their job at 42 or something, right? And so I'm excited for this episode for everybody, and I just think that there's something that everyone can benefit from in this discussion. And I mean, I'm recently early retired, and I'm going to benefit from this discussion, right? Because the concept of kind of designing your life, which we're going to get into, I think is just so important and truly applies to everyone, regardless of your, quote, kind of early retirement goals or not.
So Jess, we're going to talk for another 15 minutes and then give you a chance to speak. I hope that's okay. I'm just kidding. All right, let's jump in. So Jess, it's been 2.5 years. What has changed in your life?
Wow. So we talked in the summer of 2020. A lot has changed since then. So when I talked to you then, I had just started my business doing career and lifestyle design coaching. And that was something that I was running my very first group program and getting that off the ground. And fast forward 9 months or from that conversation, well, really 9 months from starting the business, 6 months from starting that conversation, I quit my job to take the leap to entrepreneurship. So I've been an entrepreneur for almost 2 years now, and not working any sort of W-2 job, and seen some exciting growth and had a lot of fun with not needing to work for a traditional employer and having a lot of flexibility over the last couple of years. Another thing that we did, so in 2021, so we had started talking about, we want, like, one of our goals for FI was to be location independent. And we articulated that goal actually back in 2018 when we started our blog. And that was our true why. And at the time, we assumed that we would need to reach full financial independence in order to be location independent. And then over time, we realized, hey, maybe that's not necessary. Like, we could make that a reality along the path to FI. And so one thing that we did in 2021 was we did an experiment where we rented a camper van to see what we, like, did we enjoy it? Would we want, you know, would we want to travel that way in the future? We had an idea of potentially building out our own camper van in the future, maybe 2024, right? And we took that trip and we absolutely loved it. It was, like, way better than we even expected it to be. And, you know, we had originally thought, okay, we'll do another longer experiment in 2022. And instead, after we got back from our first experiment, we were like, okay, we actually want to do this. And so we decided within, like, a couple of months to, like, buy the van, hire someone to build it out for us. And so we had a camper van built out and designed it ourselves, and took a longer road trip over the summer, and are excited to gear up for more road trips up here. Yeah. And then the last thing that I'll mention is that my husband, Corey, actually recently gave notice at his employer that he'll be quitting his job as well in early 2023. Actually, a few weeks before we hit the road on a 3-month road trip in our camper van. So yeah, a lot has changed since we talked last. One thing that I will say is, we definitely have learned that we can design the lives that we want before reaching FI. I think in 2020, we were at a place already where we had realized that we had reached coast financial independence. And so we were in a strong position. But even now, we're less than 50% of the way to FI, and figuring out how to design our post-FI lifestyle that we would want now, long before actually reaching that number.
Jess, I love it. I have a few follow-ups on stuff you just said. Mm-hmm. Can you define coast-FI for our listeners?
Yeah. So coast-FI is, I would say, the point where saving and investing another dollar becomes optional, right? For your traditional retirement. So it's the point where you've already invested enough at your age that it will grow to provide you with a comfortable traditional retirement. You don't need to add another dollar as long as you simply cover your expenses until that period of time. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love that term. And you guys, correct me if I'm wrong, you guys coined the term slow FI and coast FI.
We coined slow FI.
Okay.
I definitely heard the term coast FI elsewhere. But we've tried to, like, trace the origins of it and we can't figure it out.
Yeah. Popularized the term coast FI, certainly. You if not, you know, others, you guys definitely have. Mm-hmm. Okay. Another question. How many hours since you've made this shift to entrepreneurship, just on average, if you even can throw one out, like, how many hours are you working on your business? Like, is it part-time, full-time? Just curious what that looks like for you.
It's definitely part-time. I would say it's about 25 hours a week.
Okay.
that I'm working on it. Yeah. So okay. My days are quite chill.
sounds lovely. Okay. And then on Corey just quitting his job, which, by the way, congrats, Corey. He's not on the show with us today, but pass our message along. Mm-hmm. What is his general plan? Like, is he going to start working with you? Does he have other stuff he's going to pursue?
Yeah, that's a great question. So It's interesting because he really, until the last year or so, has been like, I love my job. Like his ideal was like he would work full time for another 5 years, not because we needed the money, but because simply because he wanted to. But over the last year, it's gotten more stressful. He's experienced some burnout. I think, you know, COVID has contributed to that. And, you know, him being in charge of like return to the office and flexibility policies and, you know, overseeing all of that for his organization. And so what we're planning to do is actually he's going to take the first 6 months as a sabbatical or a career break. So to focus on burnout recovery, and like have some fun. And then he's going to figure out exactly what he wants to be doing next. And I think there's a lot of ideas and possibilities. Like he's so entrepreneurial minded. Like he always has different like business ideas, but hasn't had time up to now to like work on them. And so I'm excited to see what he decides to pursue. And he will be spending some more time working with me on the Fioneer stuff too. I have a very long list of things he can help me out on. But nice. I'm going to give him a reprieve for 6 months until I put him to work.
Yeah, that's so funny. If I don't know if I'm curious if you'll stick with the 6 months when you give him a reprieve, or if like a month in you'll be like, okay, time for my Fioneer's honey-do list. But I love the concept of just, I love the term burnout recovery and just how intentional you're being, or he's being, about thinking of that first 6 months as burnout recovery time. I think I'm just now exactly at 6 months post leaving. And had I even like mentally named it that in my head, I think it would have changed my perspective and, how I just thought about this time. So that's just cool. I love the way you guys think about stuff.
So Jess, a lot has changed in your life in the past 2.5 years since we talked, a lot of really exciting stuff. I'm interested in your thoughts about what shifts you have seen in the FIRE movement in that time, of which you are an influential voice.
It's very interesting because when I first learned about financial independence, I felt like it was all about deprivation, and it was all about, I think you were talking about this at the beginning. Like it felt like it was all about the sacrifice and it felt like it was depriving yourself now for 10 years from now when I could live the life that I actually wanted. And so that concept I didn't identify with that concept. The biggest reason why is that I learned about financial independence once I was already burnt out in a job and couldn't imagine staying in the same situation that I was already in for 10 more years, just so that I could like be super miserable for that time, and then be able to do the things that I wanted at that point. And so I thought that there must be a different way to go about it. And then I started hearing people who had reached financial independence start to talk about how they had pursued financial independence at such a fast pace, and that they encouraged other people to do things differently and realize that like you're not going to get to your magic number and then automatically, like magically, your life is going to be happy and better and joyful, right? That there's all of this work that we need to do to get to that place. So I started seeing a few like key names talking about that. But there wasn't really anyone doing that, right? It was like the people that had reached FI were saying do things differently. But I didn't see anyone actually starting to do things differently yet. So we wanted to be the voices of people who were doing things differently and sharing more and elevating the stories of people who were designing their lives and enjoying the journey, as they were working toward their financial goals. And so in terms of the changes that I've seen, I've definitely seen a significant shift in the I think, mindset of people who are pursuing financial independence over the past few years. I think there's still plenty of people who are in that numbers, the number is the most important thing camp. But I think so many more people are now realizing that it's not about the number, right? It's about, like, they don't really want financial independence. They want all of the things that financial independence represents. Right? They want freedom, flexibility, wealth, right? Those things that will enable them to build the life that they want. And so focusing on that is just as important as getting to your financial goals.
Yeah, I love that. So as we get into some other discussions here, I think it would be helpful to clarify for people the difference between financial freedom and financial independence. Because I think you and we'll both kind of use some of those terms. And I think they're two different things. And I'd love to hear just kind of your definition and perspective on them.
Yeah. So I would say financial independence is the point in which you have enough passive income that can completely cover your lifestyle. So you don't ever need to earn another dollar unless you choose to. Right. Whereas financial freedom, I think, is a much broader concept. I think there's a lot of things along your path to financial independence that can grant you more financial freedom to make different choices. So being debt free allows you to make new choices, like working less or making less because you have fewer expenses, right? Or having what I call FU money, or a solid emergency fund, could allow you to quit a job without a backup plan, or to start a business, or to take a mini retirement, right? Something like that. And then reaching Coast Fi then provides you with even more financial freedom, because at that point, then you only need to cover your actual costs. So instead of, you know, the 20 to 50% that people pursuing financial independence have going toward investments, at that point, they could say, I want to scale back work to only cover my actual costs. Or similar to us over the last couple of years, you could say, I'm going to invest in making my dream a reality, right? And so we invested, instead of investing in the stock market, we invested a good portion of our savings over the last couple of years in our camper van. That's going to, you know, serve us well in years to come. So financial freedom, I think, is a much broader concept that allows you to make different choices all along your path.
Well, and what Corey just did is a great example of that, right? Because he's, like you said, he's going to take those 6 months for true recovery, and then he might do something else, right? He's not going to just sit around and hang out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yep, exactly. Yeah. And with that, I think there's a few things that made us feel comfortable with saying, okay, Corey's going to quit his job. We're not financially independent yet, but we have a number of these financial freedom building blocks in place that enable us to do that, right? So we have that pot of FU money that, you know, I think I recently did the calculations that it's like in cash, we have a year and a half worth of expenses. And that's if neither of us works or generates any income,
right,
we would be okay. Right.
And that is, yeah, that's financial freedom, that year and a half.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. And then there's knowing we're Coast Fi, right? And so we know we don't need to invest another dollar and we'll still have a comfortable traditional retirement. So we don't need to be worried about future Jess and Corey, right? In terms of that. And then the last is knowing we have different income streams as well. And in our business, we have different income streams. And so that makes us feel like it feels just a lot less scary to make a change like this, because it's not like we're not dependent on one source of income that could dry up, right, at any moment. If something dries up, we have these other sources of income that we could focus on building up. And so I think those three things made us feel really confident to be able to move forward.
So Jess, you know, thinking back, I realize now that we reference you and your blog quite frequently on our podcast. In fact, we talked about you just a couple of weeks ago when we were talking about a concept called the arrival fallacy. Have you heard about this before? Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we discussed how closely tied it is to one of your sayings that the journey to financial independence should be as remarkable as the destination, which we really love. And again, we talk about all the time. And so I'm curious to hear how you are helping put that into practice for people. So you're doing some coaching now. What is the framework that you use to help clients design their life?
So I use a lifestyle design framework that's really more of a cycle, right? So it's something that is continuous as, you know, we continue to learn and grow and take action. But the three stages of that lifestyle design process, the first one is to identify the elements of your ideal life. And so that is really figuring out what it is that you truly love to do, right? What kind of activities bring you joy? Two, what are your core motivations? What gets you up in the morning every day? Right? And three is, how can you carry out your what and your why in a way that actually feels really good, right? So that aligns with your core essence and like your core nature. And just to share a few, like to help you understand more about this framework, I can share some examples from my own life. So in terms of my what, right? And the things that I love to do, I love to explore, and try new things and see new places, right? I love to help people learn and grow, and I like to facilitate and train, right? Those are some of my favorite things. I love to write. I love solving puzzles. Like, I don't know, right? Like, it's a puzzle for me in the morning when I'm like making my coffee and breakfast to be like, what is the most efficient way that I can do this? Right. And so that's one thing that I know that I like really love. And so having a puzzle of like some kind of problem solving to do, are things that I love to do. In terms of core motivations, right, and what I call the sort of the what, why, and how, and my why, there's a couple of things. So one is like, I feel like I'm a learner and a teacher at heart, and I am constantly bringing in new things and learning new information and applying it to myself. But to me, that learning process doesn't feel complete until I can turn it around and share it with someone else. Then it's like, okay, this learning process is now complete for me, right? And for me, part of that core motivation is seeing the like light bulb moments happen. I absolutely love that. Helping people become more of like stepping into themselves, right? Whereas like I got to do a lot of my what when I worked in HR, but it was never for the reasons that identified with me most. And that was a huge reason why I decided that like that wasn't for me anymore, because the goal was keep people at this employer for longer and get their best work from them.
Yes. for as little money as possible.
Yeah.
I was just being jaded and throwing another lens on that. I love everything you just shared there. And mm-hmm. We personally, I think, have a lot in common of just what we enjoy doing and like what lights us up. But mm-hmm. I love the insight of that you realized you don't get as much from the learning of things if you can't share it with someone else, and that it's almost like you need both elements of that. Cause that is a really meaningful insight that clearly has, you know, shaped you getting into mm-hmm. coaching and just your blogging and how you've been, you know, sharing it with people. But that those sorts of nuggets and insights, I think, are so important to be able to realize about yourself, to then use that mm-hmm. to design your life to do things that fill you up and don't empty you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then I think sometimes the hardest part is then when you get to the how, right? So it's how can you actually carry out the what and the why in a way that feels really good, right? And so figuring out like who you are and how to actually carry that out. And so some things that I've learned about myself are I actually really enjoy small groups of people. I'm more introverted. And so I know that I need more time alone, but I do get energy when I'm with small groups of people, as well. But I also do know that I need my breaks, right? And so I love the coaching work that I do, but I know that I can only work with three or four groups at a time. Because if I do more than that, then that's going to be too much human interaction for me. You know?
I can relate.
Oh, yeah, right? Exactly. And so, And so there's just some important things that you can learn about, you know, and for me, I want to be doing things that are creative and problem solving. And, you know, and I know that because of, you know, previous health and mental health challenges and all of that, one of the core components of my how is to make sure that I have ample white space in my day and lots of free time to be able to take care of my physical and mental health. And so that's the first step, right? Is figuring out the what, the why, and the how in that framework. And there's a few ways that people can do that. And so some of that is through reflection, right? So thinking and, you know, writing and journaling about what does your ideal day look and feel like? Or what are the different peak experiences you've had in your life? And what can you glean from those? And then some of it is also building more of an awareness of what you're experiencing on a day to day and what you like and what you don't. And so actually one thing that we do in my coaching program is all the participants over a 6-week period of time track every activity in their day and rate it on a scale of 1 to 5, how energizing was this thing? And how engaging was this thing, right? So 1 being I wanted to take a nap or could not hold my attention. I hated it. And 5 being I was in a state of flow. I absolutely loved it. You know, time seemed to fly by. I had more energy afterward than when I started, right? And learning about that can help you get a sense, one, of, right, starting to realize that there are things that you actually like that you do. Right. Sometimes we think of work or we think of life as all or nothing, things are going well or they're not going well. But it can help us tease out what are the small pieces of things that we really enjoy? And then how can we do more of those? What are the pieces of things that we really hate? And how can we do less of those? And can we start doing less of those things immediately? Right. And so that can help us immediately start to make some shifts, as well as help to inform what we love to do, what our core motivations are, and then how we can carry that out in a way that, you know, feels good, as well. So that's the first step of the process. And in some ways that almost provides a lens in which to look at different opportunities, right? And so as you move into this stage where you're dreaming big and coming up with new ideas and figuring out things that you want to try, you can then look back at it and say, does this align with what I love to do, my core motivations? And do I imagine that it's going to provide me with these things that I need in order to, you know, live a healthy, fulfilling life?
Hey, Jess.
Yeah.
Have there been times on your journey in the past few years where you have used this process you're talking about and realized you really don't like something and stopped it? I'm just curious for some examples or an example.
Yeah, great question. So I think that's a really good question. I think one thing that's been really helpful for me is when I first took the leap to entrepreneurship a couple of years ago, after several months, I realized wow, I am feeling really busy. And like drained and depleted. And so one thing that I started to do on a regular basis, and I had, you know, I created a monthly checkpoint to reflect and to say, like, how is my business feeling to me? And is this what I want to be doing? And at the pace that I want to be doing it at, right? And all of that. And so that's actually helped me a lot to, like, I wouldn't say I've gotten to a point of saying like, oh, I really hate this thing that I'm doing, right? Because I'm doing it monthly, it's helping me realize things as they're coming up so that I can make the change before it becomes so critical, if that makes sense. So yeah, like recently, yeah.
I was just gonna say, I think that's one of the nice things about being an entrepreneur is you can you can learn fast and move fast, and you can do that at work sometimes, depending on the culture and environment. But there were a lot of things at work where you would realize something wasn't working, and it took a while to like influence that change. And by the time you influenced it, you were a little like, "I'm over," you know, like, "I'm burning." You know, you kind of lost your momentum.
Right.
I say you. I'm talking about myself here. No, I love that just approach in general, and that just that you can do it in a more like almost real time, you know, not perfectly real time, but in a faster sequence.
Yeah. So just as an example, one thing that I had realized, and I think it was in September of this year, was I had so many projects that I wanted to be working on. But I felt like I didn't have any time to do them because I had just all of the like maintain, keep, you know, what I thought was like, here's the stuff I have to be doing every week. And so then it made me realize like, okay, let me question some of these assumptions about what's truly necessary. Right. And I think I had just always assumed I have a blog. I have to write weekly. I have to release content once a week. You know, and I decided to question that assumption to say, like, would I best be able to help and support people by writing new content every week or by doing, you know, other things, right? And so for me, that was a point where I realized, okay, I'm going to experiment. I'm going to say for the next 3 months, I'm going to write every other week and see what happens. And each of my blog posts are pretty in depth. So I spend about 10 hours working on them. And so writing every other week means I got like 20 hours a month back. And like in the last 2 months, I like re-updated my whole website. I planned a retreat, right? In just by getting 20 hours a month back. And so it's been really nice to say, hey, I get to question the assumptions. I don't have to keep doing the writing every week if I don't want to. I probably will bump back up at other times when I'm not doing projects and things like that. But I'm finding a lot of joy in having the opportunity to do some of these bigger creative, like work on these bigger creative challenges.
So Jess, hearing you talk about your personal journey, you know, it's clear that designing your life can be quite challenging. And I think it benefits from your ability to be introspective and recognize that when things are working or not working. For people who might see this and say, like, I couldn't possibly make this change, or this is too difficult, or I couldn't combat the external forces in my life. What are some things that have made this easier for you and other people might find a benefit?
Yeah. So I would say the most important thing for me has been finding a community of people who really get me and who understand my goals and what I'm trying to do. Right. There's always going to be people who don't, right? Who don't, especially when you're trying to live an unconventional life that goes against societal expectations. It will be hard because most people are not going to understand what you're doing. I imagine you've experienced this as well with the pursuit of FIRE.
And even more so in the past 6 months after actually leaving my job.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so, yeah. So for me, I think building that community with like-minded people who also are trying to live extraordinary, unconventional, like expectation defying lives, it changes everything. And by that, I mean, one, it helps me to see, like, I used to look at people who are doing things differently and think like, they're so much different than I am. I could never do that. And then I started getting to know some of these people who were doing things and realized like, they're just regular people just trying to figure stuff out too. They're not that different than me. Right. And so part of that was that encouragement of saying like, okay, like I can see myself in them and they're not some like superhero, like have like this superhero strength and courage that like I don't have. Right. So there's that piece. I think the second thing is being part of a community of people who like really believes in your ideas and can help you dream even bigger about them. And so the next part of the lifestyle design process is actually getting into this like dreaming big stage where, you know, you take what you learn about yourself and think, what are all the different ways that I could put these things together? And ways that seem really exciting and interesting. And, you know, some of them are terrible ideas because we just come up with everything we possibly can. But it's a really interesting process when you're going through that with a group of people, because, you know, sometimes I would come to the table and say, like, this seems like a really pie in the sky idea. Right. Like for me in 2019, I went through a lifestyle design process with a group of people and I said, I'd love to plan retreats in beautiful locations around the world and like bring people to them. And I was like, but that seems like a really pie in the sky idea. And the group of people I was working through it with were like, why? Of course you can do that. Like, why couldn't you do that and just get started on figuring out how to do that today?
Yeah, I agree with them. Mm-hmm. I love it.
Yeah. And so it was one of those experiences, though, of like, these people believe in me more than I believe in myself. Okay. I can believe in myself that much, too. Right. And so it's this process of being like, okay, my dreams, I feel like pie in the sky, are not actually that crazy. I could make them a reality. And then when you start to also brainstorm ideas for other people and share encouragement and like turn to them and say, you could totally do that idea, you could totally move that forward, there's a point in which for me that I've seen where I start to realize that I have this tremendous belief in their ability to succeed. And then I realize I can apply that same belief to myself. Like, it isn't right. And so as we're like having these interactions with this like-minded community, it's like, oh, I believe in you. Then like the voice of my like inner voice becomes less of critique, and more like more kind and generous to myself. Yeah.
And then starts to create ideas, right? And go down that mm-hmm. path of, hey, how could mm-hmm. I do these retreats? And
exactly. Yeah. And focusing a lot more on the possibilities. So then I would say the last piece around the lifestyle design process then is when you come up with a bunch of ideas, some of them might feel pie in the sky or like, how could I ever do this? But hopefully you have a community with you that's like, of course you can do that. Is to then get into experimentation. And so the thing that I love about taking an experimentation approach is that it lowers the stakes a lot, right? And so it's not, you're no longer saying like, okay, I'm going to try out this thing. And if it's conventionally successful, great. And if it's not, boohoo, I failed kind of thing. It's if you do an experiment, the experiment's successful if you learn something from it, right? And I'm not, you know, when I was like, I want to do retreats, I wasn't like, okay, tomorrow I'm deciding to, you know, spend tens of thousands of dollars to put deposits in and, you know, try to run a retreat and just see if people will show up, right? I decided to experiment, right? And so the experimentation was saying, okay, how could I get a similar experience by shrinking this down into something that I could try out that's low risk in an afternoon, right? And so for me, one of those steps was, let me plan a local meetup. Let me do a presentation at my local Choose FI group. You know, let me start doing some online workshops and that kind of thing. And so it helped me to see, one, I actually enjoy doing it, right? Learned things from it and then built confidence because people actually showed up, right? And so that's the, I think, the importance around experimentation is it shrinks it down, makes it feel less scary. You learn from it and then you build your confidence to take the next bigger step.
Yeah.
So that when you get to a point where, you know, you're, this thing becomes like, this is this dream that I set 3 years ago is possibly be, you know, becoming a reality. It doesn't necessarily feel like a big scary leap anymore.
Yeah.
It feels like the next logical step along the path.
I love the experimentation, Jess. And just for a moment, you did that with your camper van. You mentioned it earlier, mm-hmm. but can you just talk about that a little bit? And I also really want to know, like, how's it going? Now that you actually have the camper van, do you feel good about the investment? But talk about your experiment you did first, because that's to me a bigger example of experimenting where you got to put some money behind the
endeavor. Yeah, for sure. So in terms of the experimentation, right, the easiest steps of experimentation were like, let's do some research. Let's watch some YouTube videos. You know, let's figure out like what it is that people are doing. Does this seem like a lifestyle we'd be interested in? Right. And so that was the first like low risk step. And then I would say the renting the camper van was a fairly low risk step, but definitely a few thousand dollar investment to do that experiment. And so we found somebody with a camper van on Outdoorsy and rented it from them. But we went into it. So I think the important thing about experimentation is that you're going into it with a purpose and like with a set of questions. Right. And so you can say, like with the retreat example or with the camper van example, right? You come up with this idea and then make a list of like, what is every question that I can think of that I have about this thing? And how can I answer those questions through experiments, right? So we went into it wondering and asking ourselves, is this a lifestyle that we are interested in pursuing? How would we want to set up our own camper van? What did we like about this one? What did we not? Did we, you know, and you know, I'm number of different questions to answer, right, going into that experiment. So then when we came out of it, we were able to reflect on it and feel like we got a clearer answer that wasn't just like, yeah, we had fun, right? We came out with a clear answer of like, yes, we love this lifestyle. This is something that we would want to do more of. And we've assessed like, yes, we think this is a good size, but we would want this, this, and this in the van, you know, as opposed to, you know, to all of those different things. And so we were able to make some decisions based on that as well for how we would move forward. And then I think you also asked about how's it going now.
Yeah, now that you put this, I mean, you published the amount that you spent on this. Do you mind sharing that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That you spent on the custom build. It was like over $100,000. Or was that 90,
it was like
100?
It was more than that.
Oh, okay. Maybe it was the car itself.
So the van itself, I think, was 60-ish. Okay. The build materials were 60-ish. And then the cost of labor was about 30. So it was about $150,000 all in.
Okay. Now, how do you feel? Are you a year into that?
We're six months in.
But how do you feel? You haven't even done your like big 3 month trip that you're talking about doing.
We did a bunch of smaller trips, including a 3 week trip over this past summer. We love it. We are so happy and excited about it, right? There's definitely like quirks and little things that we're working out, but we absolutely like love that as a way to travel. Like, it just feels slower. Even though we're doing a lot and seeing a lot, like, we get to make our own food and we can spend the afternoon, like, going and parking at a beautiful, like, just like a beautiful park or a beautiful scenic overlook for like 4 hours in the afternoon, to just relax. But in like, in a really beautiful location. And so, yeah, we definitely loved what we got to do this summer. And then we're really excited to embark on the longer trips. And so we've actually been starting to think and, you know, we're planning out that 3 month trip, you know, and also seeing that as an experiment too, right? Like, that's the next bigger experiment, to see, like, do we want to do more of that? And how does it feel to work from the road, right? And so we're starting to plan ahead to say, okay, we want to do a lot of travel and, you know, we want to do a lot of exploration, but like, what's the right pace in which to go? And do we want to do activities in the morning and work in the afternoon? And how does that feel? And so we have, you know, still a number of questions as we're going into this trip, and then we'll adjust as we go as well.
You guys are, the camper van's one example, but in general, I think your entire lifestyle and just the journey you've been on in the last 4 to 5 years, it just embodies, like, you practice what you preach, right? Like, you're out there talking about this and coaching, but you've done it all yourself, and you are the kind of test case for just the experimenting and the going through the whole process. So I love it. And then I love the camper van example. Okay, I'm going to switch to something a little bit more just, I was going to say boring or logistics, but this is like the number one question I get. And I am now in the middle of this myself. And so selfishly, I'm also super curious. What are you guys doing for medical benefits when Corey is not at his job?
Yeah, good question. So we're planning on paying for our own health insurance through the exchange.
Okay, that's a easy answer. That's what I'm in the middle of right now. That is also our plan. We're on COBRA right now through the end of this year, but we are in the exchange enrollment period right now, which you likely have not had the pleasure of experiencing yet. Mm-hmm. And it's very different than signing up for your workplace plans. Mm-hmm. And just the subsidies and how they work and just a bunch of things. There's a lot of complexities to it that I'm learning and will soon be documenting afterwards, because I'm discovering there's not a lot of documentation about specifically leveraging the marketplace in early retirement.
There's
documentation about just using it as like someone who is assumed to be an older person, but there's not a lot that's unique to like this point in your lives where you're in your 30s or 40s and you're trying to optimize the right setup and also the subsidies and other things. So
it's interesting because for us, we're planning on still generating, you know, significant income, definitely enough to cover our expenses and hopefully to save a little bit. Like, our plan is to continue saving about 20%, since we just, I don't know, that just makes us feel more comfortable. And I think we can easily do that while still living the lives that we want to be living.
Yeah.
And so we're less concerned about the subsidies, knowing that we might get some subsidies, but probably minimal subsidies. Yeah. And so for us, as we were thinking about it, we started thinking like, okay, we might have to pay $20,000 for this. And then realized like, that's not necessarily the case, because that might be what we have to pay when we're quite a bit older. But looking ahead, we realized that the likelihood is that we'll be paying about $10,000 next year for
two of us for
health insurance. And that was less than we were expecting.
And I lately have been thinking of it, a couple of things. One, if you are paying that amount or more, it's because you're making a reasonable amount of income. And so that's how it should work, right? You you have the money to be able to pay that $10,000. Mm-hmm. And then the other thing is, it's a little bit of, I was going to say tax, but tax is not even the right word, because tax implies like something bad in some way, I think. Not that taxes are bad, but it's the cost of your freedom in a way, right? Mm-hmm. So yeah, you can go to an employer and they're going to subsidize a massive amount of that $10,000, or for some companies, all of it. But you're in chains as a result of that, right? And so that the cost of your freedom is higher than I would like to pay medical insurance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. No. And actually, in the SloFi Facebook group recently, we've been talking a lot about that with people. We had a meetup last month on working part-time, and most, you know, the biggest objection for people was, well, if I work part-time, health insurance won't be subsidized and all of this stuff. And there were so many people that were like, no, that is just the price that you can pay for freedom. Like, if you can get to the point where you can cover that cost, then just incorporate that into your plan. Like, it's not necessarily a barrier. It's definitely a consideration, and a problem to solve, but not necessarily a barrier.
Yeah, that's a good way of thinking about it.
All right, Jessica. Well, it sounds like your journey is going quite well, and I'm excited to hear about your camper van adventures once those kick off. Will we be interviewing you in another 2.5 years from the van? Are you going to have a microphone set up there? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, probably.
Right. Hopefully sooner than 2.5 years.
So for all of our listeners who are interested in keeping up with you, where can people find you on the internet?
Yeah, my blog is thefioneers.com. So that's like pioneers, but with an F, for financial independence. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at thefioneers. And then that SloFi Facebook group that I mentioned, you can find that at thefioneers.com/FB for Facebook.
All right. Well, love Jessica, it's been a pleasure. Thank you for coming on the show.
Thanks so much for having me.
Thanks, Jess.
Bye.
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 Well, thank you guys for listening. If you have been challenged or inspired by what you have heard, please rate and review the show. You can also subscribe to make sure that you never miss an episode.
If you have any thoughts or questions, we'd love to hear from you. And you can leave us a voicemail or text us at 404-981-3370 or hit us up on Instagram.